Welcome to the Tour Life Podcast from Well Better Best. I'm Janine, your host, integrative nutrition health coach and personal trainer. In the past 10 years, I've had the privilege of meeting some of the most interesting and hardworking professionals in the music industry. Whether you are a fan of live music or someone who actually puts on the shows, you'll find some great stories, advice, and encouragement to live a happier, healthier life doing what you love. Today's guest is a tour manager and naturopathic nutritionist who has worked with artists such as Wolf Alice, Placebo, Katie Malua, PJ Harvey, Marina Diamandis, The Chemical Brothers, and James Blake. She is the creator of The Back Lounge, a support group where touring professionals have come together throughout the pandemic to share their experiences as well as to prepare to get back on the road in a healthier and more sustainable way. She is also a member of the Tour Production Group, which looks to make touring a friendlier and more inclusive place. In this episode, we discuss the magic of going on your first tour, getting back to work after experiencing burnout, how the illusions of being on tour contrast with reality, and how the Back Lounge came to be, as well as ways we can bring wellness on tour. You can find her on Instagram at SusieGR and at The Back Lounge Touring, and also at healthytouring.com. Here is my conversation with Susie Green. Susie, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show. I'm so excited to get to know you. How are you?
I'm good. It's such a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me. I've been following your podcast a long time.
That's awesome. Honestly, to hear that is seriously such a pleasure. But we met because I had the honor of being a guest on The Back Lounge. So I'm so excited to talk about that. But first, I definitely want to get started with your personal story. So tell me, how did you get started in the music industry? And did you even know it was something you wanted to do?
That's an interesting question. So I was always obsessed with live music. I used to, as a teenager, trail around after certain bands, club nights, any kind of environment where there was music, but particularly live music. That was always very much my thing. And then what happened was I went to art college and ended up spending probably more time going to gigs and getting just trying to get behind the scenes with music. I came out of college. I started taking some photography, music photographs, you know, gigs and whatnot. But it was more the music I was into. So in a sort of strange turn of events, I ended up interning at a record label, one that I originally actually started taking pictures for. And I kept hanging around their offices and getting in the way and making the tea and doing the photocopying and doing anything that needed doing. And I think it was a combination of luck and just complete enthusiasm for all things that I think I'd been interning there for 2-3 months. And they did a one-off club night at what was a very seminal club at the time in London, the Blue Note. And they got offered a residency and they needed someone to run it. And I'd never run a club night before, but I'd been to a lot. And I stuck my hand up and went, yeah, great, I'll do that. And I figured I'd learn how to do it as I did it. Which is what happened. So that was my entry level. And then from that, we had some bands on the label who appeared at the club night. And then we had one band in particular who wanted to go on tour. And the label was a very small label at the time. It's actually quite a big label now. It's Ninja Tune, who have a US office as well. So back then, I think there was four of us working in the office. So again, this band wanted to go on the road. And I stuck my hand up and went, great, I'll do it. Where are we going? And I remember the first time I actually stepped on a tour bus was after I'd hired one. And even that was an adventure. I was like, where do I get a tour bus? And I remember the agent saying, oh, you know, you can hire them. So I hired one. And I remember when it drove into the yard where the rehearsal studio was. And I was so excited. And I just couldn't believe how big it was and how rock and roll it was. And it had a kitchen and Yeah, and then we went on tour for 2 weeks, and that was my entry level into touring.
That is so cool. It's funny how when you're passionate about something as amazing as music, which I feel like a lot of people have a passion for, but you kind of see on the other side, like you want to be on that other side. And the way that you can get there sometimes is so unexpected.
Definitely. I think I've always sort of resonated with music people. I've always liked creative people. I've always found touring folk, and whether that's artists or crew, very much a sort of certain type of people, quite kind of freedom loving, unconventional, possibly risk taking as well. I don't always mean that in a negative sense either, but just kind of like a sense of adventure. And that really appealed to, you know, especially as I was sort of going into my 20s and growing up and thinking, what do I want to do with my life? I just found that so exciting, so alluring.
That sense of adventure is really useful when you don't really know what you're doing, right? And you're figuring it out along the way.
Yes. And I've done a lot of figuring out along the way, for sure. I think it's sort of been part adventure that's carried me, part enthusiasm, part lucky breaks, meeting some very key people along the way who have helped me, people I've been able to ask questions, and I've made a few mistakes as well along the way, but somehow managed to pick myself up and dust myself off and go back and do it again and learn.
I know that you took some time off of the road, and I'm really interested in knowing what your life was like, you know, from starting and learning and making those mistakes, but actually making it like the thing that you do, and then transitioning into a phase where you were like, I'm going to do something else. Tell me about that period of your life.
Yeah. So I guess the summary would be I burnt out with it. I always went in, dived in head first, said yes to everything. And certainly when I started out, I didn't know my limits. And yeah, there's only so much, you know, I very much believe in saying yes to things. I very much believe in if you're offered something, if it feels right, you should try it. But I think I just got so kind of overstressed out with everything, had too much on my plate. The record label I was working for was starting to get really, really busy, was really profiled. There was more and more bands and DJs who wanted to tour, and we were doing lots of club nights, had lots of residents going. And I didn't know when to stop. I didn't know when to sort of take a break and look after myself. And then what happened was I started to realize that that very thing that I really loved doing was no longer this thing that I loved doing. I was actually starting to get quite resentful of the way I was feeling. And then actually it occurred to me one day of like, I hate this. I don't want to be doing this anymore. And I actually took time out with a view as to, I'm not sure whether or not I'm going to come back. And the label were very cool about that. And went traveling for 6 months with a backpack, and then came back and thought, I'll try and do things a little bit differently. And I actually then went back to touring for a couple more years. And I don't know, somehow it just didn't sit right. It wasn't quite a Susie shaped hole, if you know what I mean. So I decided there was one particular tour that just kind of did it for me. It was a really quite a hard tour. Everyone seemed to be going through some kind of emotional breakup with their partners on the tour as well. It really was quite distraught. And I came off that and thought, I don't want to live my life like this. I want to have a relationship. I want to be around to have a relationship. I want to be around to see my friends, you know, to have a life here. And I felt more and more disconnected to life at home and thought, no, this isn't for me. So I ended up doing something completely different, which at the time I never thought the two worlds would meet, was I retrained in nutrition. So I'm now a nutritional therapist qualified one, and I did yoga teacher training, and I've done massage training and all kinds of different things in wellness. And I was doing a lot of sort of festival work during the summer to have a bit of an income. And because I still wanted connection with the music industry, I hadn't completely turned my back on it. It was more the touring that I thought, I can't do this. I can't sustain this anymore. So I had a connection. And then when I qualified, I was doing nutritional therapy, working out of a clinic, funnily enough, working with a lot of music and media type clients, because I think you tend to attract the people, you know, whose lifestyles you understand. So it's very much sort of unconventional lifestyles. I always said I was a nutritionist who won't tell you off. And and then what happened is I did that for a number of years. And then completely out of the blue, which would be 6-7 years ago now, I got a text message from a manager who I'd worked with some years before at a festival. And he said, are you still tour managing? And I mean, I hadn't spoken to the guy in 5 years or something, maybe longer. So I was like, nope. And he said, well, do you want to know who it's for? So I was like, okay. So he said, PJ Harvey. So I was like, oh, okay. You know, loved PJ Harvey. Didn't think for a minute I wanted to go back out on tour again. But I thought, well, it's worth a conversation. You know, very flattered to even have been thought of. So we had a conversation, and I was on holiday in Spain at the time. And he sort of told me the setup. And I said, well, when I get back to the UK, I'll come and meet you. And it was the last few days of my holiday. And not go too deep into the story, the very last day of my holiday in Spain with my boyfriend, we went horse riding, and he had a horrific accident in front of me, which actually ended up putting him in hospital for the next month. And so I was stuck in Spain getting text messages from this manager going, so when you're back, so when you're back. And I was like, well, we've had a bit of a delay. And then when I finally got back to the UK a month later with my partner, he's okay, he's fine, but it was tough in the beginning. I think I was so bombed out and spaced out by everything that had just happened. I went into this meeting with this manager and another manager, and I think I must have been so laid back and out there. Instead of being worried and uptight and, you know, interview formal, I was like, well, this is what I do, you know, and this is what I haven't done, and this is what I think I could do. And they loved it. And they said, we really want you to meet her, which I did. And we got on really well. And suddenly I'd signed myself up to 18 months of touring.
Not what you were looking for, but definitely what.
Yeah, it felt, I can't explain it. It felt right. It was, I do really think that the really big things that have happened in my life have been some massive signpost from the universe that, you know, I'm like, oh, okay. Oh, right. This one's in front of me. Guess I'm meant to do that then. So suddenly I was going back out on tour, having not done it for years, you know, and working at a higher level than I was when I stopped. So intimidating, scary, adventurous, but again, had some good people to call. And I remember after our first year, Polly and her manager took me out for dinner, and it was at Christmas. And they said, in three words, describe what this year has been to you. And I was like, three words, can I have five? I got away with it. Is that five words? But yeah, and that's what it felt like. I couldn't believe it happened so fast, and it was so exciting and so amazing. I was working with such fantastic people. I mean, I was working really hard. It wasn't the easiest of tours, but I just felt like I was in the right place and had a really bizarre, unique skill set to bring to the table, because Polly's very much into nutrition, looking after herself. Her band were like, she called her band her nine husbands. So it's a big band, some of them older. I had all these useful skills that everyone was really into. So I hadn't realized that actually I could bring some of this stuff I'd been doing into touring. It just never occurred to me that anyone would be interested, you know, in big, bad rock and roll, but they were. And That's how I got back to touring. So I've been doing it again, this time about 6 years. And actually, it's been great. And I've approached it in a really different way. I mean, I've had a few reminders along the way of, okay, you're taking on a bit too much. But I definitely feel older and wiser, you know, with, you know, just more skills, more tools to be able to manage myself and look after the people I work with.
So something that really stuck out for me was that you mentioned that in the tour, previous to you leaving touring for a little while, you said that there were relationships and lots of issues that were happening where people were going through a lot of heartbreak. And that really made an impression on you. So tell me about that. How did that change the way you approached things when you went back?
Yeah. So that particular tour, I think, was there was a lot of dysfunctional relationships going on. And I think part of that was circumstance, just the sheer amount we'd been on tour. One of the band had a new baby. I was witness to a few things, a little bit of that, what goes on tour, you know, what happens on tour stays on tour, which made me quite uncomfortable as well, if I'm honest. So there were a lot of things, being female, and I was the only woman on that tour as well, for the most part. Occasionally we would have a female merchandiser, but I mean, this is what, 16 years ago? And things have changed a lot, and it is getting more diverse, and there are more women on the road. But back then there was a lot less women on the road, and it was still a little bit more unusual. I mean, I think it still is unusual, but it was even more so then. So I felt very female, and also very much had that thing. I felt quite invisible at times, because once they'd got over the fact, you know, there was a woman with them on tour, you know, once they'd got over that and got used to you, you just became completely invisible. And there was a lot of sort of quite bad boy behavior going on. So that, yeah, it only added fuel to the fire of me thinking, I don't think I want to be around this. This isn't good examples of trust and, you know, what I wanted from a relationship, for sure. And I also found very much at the time, and I still think this actually, I think sometimes it's easier for men to be away on tour and for women to be accepting of them coming home. But I think it's harder for a woman to be away on tour, quite often surrounded by a lot of guys, for quite a lot of men can't really understand that. There's, you know, there's a lot of illusions about what being on tour is. You know, it's glamorous. You're going to, ooh, Italy, and, you know, whatever. When actually the reality is you've got barely an idea what country you're in, other than the catering might be a bit better, you know. And, you know, it's a grueling schedule. And I think the reality is very different. So I thought at that point, I was mostly single. I was having a few sort of short-term relationships that quite often just fell on the rocks because I was going away so much. So I thought, if I'm at home, you know, leading a more regular life, I'd be much more likely to start sustaining something, you know, more like a relationship. And I was in my early 30s at that point. And that is actually ultimately what happened. As soon as I started building a life at home, I met a long-term partner. Things changed on that front. And then what's been so interesting coming back to it this time is he's very accepting of me going away. So much so that when lockdown hit and suddenly we were stuck with each other the whole time, it was a bit too much. It was because we just got used to our little routines, you know, and sometimes it did my head in having him there the whole time. And I know that having me there the whole time too was for him. Sometimes he had to go out, you know, so it's it was an interesting change how it's sort of gone from one to the other. But I'm grateful I got to take that time out, come back in a different way.
Yeah, I think it really helped you try something different, and you knew that something wasn't right. and you gave yourself the room and the space to really try to figure it out.
Yeah, absolutely. And also now, sort of going back to touring second time around, I very much build into the schedule wherever I can proper time off. So I try and have, I normally have beginning of the year, I normally take a couple of months off. And I mean, sometimes, you know, that gets sort of eked into it by a bit of prep work or whatnot. But to have like a solid block of time at home is really important. I think without that, I think it's quite hard to sustain a relationship. You know, your lives become so separate. And I think as well, it's really important that while you're away, you connect, you take time to pick up the phone. You know, I think actually now the way technology has developed in the last year or so, there's no excuse to not, you know, actually have some screen time together. I mean, it's not being with them in person, but it's certainly better than nothing.
Yeah, it's funny. I've had a conversation on the show with a friend where we discussed what type of interaction to have when you talk to your partner when you're on the road, because you know he expressed how sometimes, you know, there's something really great happened or they're in a really cool place and he wants so badly to just tell them like this great thing that happened, but he found that it's actually it was a little bit more it was a little bit better for the other person when he started by asking them how they had been doing and then allowed them to ask if there was anything cool that happened. Because a lot of times when you're the person back home, you have this image that, you know, it's all fun and games and it's all glamour. And so it kind of reinforces that view. And it's interesting how the dynamics in these conversations with your partner can change, and you really have to work at it, and you have to be really cognizant of how the other person is going to feel in the way that you express your experience, which is something that I think we learn to do as we learn to communicate as we mature, but it's definitely a different thing when you're on the road. Does that sort of...
Oh, spot on. It reminds me of that scene in Lost in Translation where, is it Bill Murray? He's on the phone to his wife and she's choosing carpet tiles or something like that. And, you know, he's in Japan in some fancy hotel and, you know, there's zero connection going on between them. And, you know, that's that sort of territory has definitely at times been very familiar. And I think it takes effort on both parts to actually make sure that when you are talking to each other, you're not also typing on your laptop. You're not also half having a conversation with someone else or watching TV or, you know, it's about being present, isn't it? And I think, yeah, I like your friend's thing about, you know, let them ask you, you know, ask them, how are they? That definitely, I mean, it's a bit like when you go traveling, isn't it? You know, you have a friend that goes traveling and they come back and they want to show you all their photos. And people want that for about 5 minutes and then they want to talk about something else. You know, people just, you know, they're everyone's wrapped up in their own lives. Who wants to hear the tour stories?
Yeah, it's funny. And I think it's really important to also just be kind to yourself when it comes to those things. I think a lot of times, you know, we'll have a conversation and we're like, oh, I wish I could have done that better. And you're really hard on yourself. But understanding that it's something that comes with practice. Communication is definitely not something that comes easily to most people. And it just gets better as you keep trying. And I think, you know, just really expressing that you're doing your best is really important.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and there's good days, bad days, aren't they? And things ebb and flow. You know, I really think that. I think that's something that comes when you're older, you realize that more as well. Instead of thinking it's all going to be wonderful every single day. And think that when you come home off tour with a huge suitcase of dirty clothes that, you know, that suddenly they're going to roll out the red carpet and they don't. Or offer to do your washing.
Yeah, they're like, I'm just trying to live my life. I don't know who you think you are, but... Oh man. So Susie, tell me, I love so much that you took these lessons, you know, you took things that you did outside of music where you learned
how to prioritize your wellness and how to help other people do that as well. And it's something that people, I've spoken to some people, and it's kind of a thing that they want to see happen in the industry, where, you know, tour managers really pay attention to how they manage the tours so that they're really taking care of the humans in the tours. How has that played out in your personal experience? And is there something that you didn't expect when you started trying to really take care of the humans?
I guess the thing that was such a surprise was that initially that anyone was interested. I just thought touring and that kind of macho rock and roll thing and looking after yourself were two very separate entities. And in some camps, I think they still are. I think what's been really interesting this past 18 months, it's that kind of like suddenly we're really focusing on mental health. And we've had to, because I think we are in a mental health crisis as a result. You know, it's a global pandemic. When has that ever happened before? A century ago? Might be another century till it happens again. But it's been such a huge thing, and it's been such a sort of enforced stop, take a look at ourselves. And I do think the music industry and touring especially does attract workaholics. And I think workaholic behavior is very much a way of squashing feeling things. So suddenly, if you take away that prop of being able to just be away the whole time, you know, your 18, 20 hour days or whatnot, and then you come home and you've got all this time, then all those squash feelings start coming up. So it's been interesting, because I guess what happened for me was when all my work disappeared last year, I was feeling very disconnected. I really needed to talk to people that understood what I was going through as someone that spent a fair amount of the year away. And I've been out in the country, and a lot of my neighbours are furloughed, you know, or retired around here. And I heard about a friend who was a school teacher, and she was meeting with other teachers on Zoom, this new thing called Zoom that we'd never heard of at that point.
What happened to Skype?
Yeah, I know. Good old Skype. It's still there.
Perfect opportunity, though. And Zoom just took over. But anyway.
Yeah, I know. That would have been a company to buy shares in. But so she was saying how useful it was just to share their experience of their sort of their worries and their fears and how they just felt about things. So I was thinking, if I can find a group like that, that's what I need. I need to connect to other people. And I got on Google and I was looking, yeah, just for a support group. And I could find various things that were very specific, therapy-based or 12-step-based. And then I found Backline Care in the US. And it's the only group I could find at the time that were running COVID support groups. So I started staying up late with the time difference and being like the lone tea-drinking Brit on their calls. And I still go on their calls. And I seriously feel like they saved me. They are the most amazing bunch of people there, two really fantastic facilitators and a really, really great bunch of people. And we all clung to each other, you know, for months through this experience, and sort of hearing someone in New York or Chicago say what they're feeling and thinking, God, that's me as well. That's me too. And they're on the other side of the planet. You know, it was such a comfort. And it made me think, well, we need a group like that in the UK. You know, why isn't there one? And I still don't know how I got the guts to get it together. But I put out a social media post, and I don't really do social media. I mean, I do a bit now, definitely do it more than I did a year and a half ago. But yeah, I just put out a post saying I feel really disconnected and disempowered. Does anyone else feel the same? If you do, let me know. I'm thinking of starting a group. And I got 50 replies in 24 hours. So a week later, we had our first call, and we've been going every week since. And it's just become the most incredible community of people. But it's been such an amazing learning curve in, you know, our shared skills and experiences and just sort of having time to spend with people, you know, talking about whatever they want to talk about. And we cover all kinds of topics. We normally have a theme, or we always have a theme actually each week, which was originally out of my nervousness of what happens if we're all on Zoom looking at each other like the Muppet Show and no one says anything. So I thought, if we've got a subject, then I could think of a few things to ask around the subject. And that's how it started. And in the beginning, especially, we had lots of psychotherapists and psychologists. And I found all kinds of people who were interested in coming on. And everyone was doing it for free. Whole thing was voluntary, but found lots of people connected with the industry who were only too happy to give up their time and come on and talk to us. And yeah, it's grown and grown. And it feels like every time I talk to someone about the group, I seem to have gone up 100. And I think we're about 1,000 people now. So we normally average between about 30 to 50 people or so each Zoom. And then we have 3 different WhatsApp groups going. We've got Facebook, which is quite active. We've got Instagram, and we're about to have a website as well. So we've decided, after we're about to come up to our 1-year anniversary, that this is something we're going to continue to do as a support, because, you know, touring can be a really hard lifestyle, really isolating. I think we've still got another 6 to 8 months of weirdness, the odd thing happening here and there, stuff getting cancelled, things changing last minute, you know, pay rates getting negotiated down, and things are strange, I think, for a while. Although I think actually in the US, it's a little different to the UK. Sounds like you guys are up and running quicker than we are.
They're trying.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting seeing different parts of the world, what their response is to this. And I think what's going to happen is, once we are up and running, it's then we're going to be inundated with work. And I think it's going to be a different problem, where people, you know, no one's got any money. Everyone needs to earn money to pay off debts, or to just sort of put some money in the war chest. And, you know, you're going to say yes to everything. So I think the next problem will be, you know, people really being exhausted, how safe they'll be on the job, how well they'll be on the job is, you know, that's where I think we might be heading. So I think a resource like a sort of peer support group could be amazing in that, because if you're on a bad tour or you're not feeling so great, you know, you don't always want to connect to people on your own tour. Sometimes you do, but if there's an outside body of people, you can put out a message on the WhatsApp group or email or whatnot and say, is anyone around? I could really do with the chat. That, you know, that's what I'm aiming for. And we're going to keep the discussions going, shared between a bunch of us, because we're all aware we're all going to start getting busy soon. So the baton will still be held. It'll still be going.
That's so exciting. And, you know, when you were tour managing and you were bringing this element of wellness, right? You said you found it surprising that people cared. And now you're getting all that reinforcement that, yeah, like, lots of people care. And it's really a culture shift that is happening. And it's amazing to be like right there when like the floodgates are opening, you know?
Yeah. I mean, seriously, no one's more surprised than I am. It is amazing, because I think what's really come out of this too is, I know that in my little ant colony, I've been doing what I do, and there's a few people I've met along the way, actually a lot of people in recovery, who've had the mindset of seeing the importance of something like meditation and looking after themselves and, you know, not immediately defaulting to X amount of beers or whatever at the end of the night, you know. But I hadn't really found a community of people like me, if you like. And now there's lots of us. And we all feel very much that this means it's much more likely we will be able to take care of ourselves. Because when you know there's other people out there who feel the same as you do, doing the same thing, you're much, you know, you feel much stronger in your position. You know, you're not that weird person on tour who, you know, doesn't want to stay up drinking because they want to get up early and go for a run. I would always say people can do whatever they like, so long as I'm allowed to do what I like. You know, I'm not saying that everyone should be doing aerobics in front of the bus. I think, you know, a lot of tours, it's been for a long time, it's catered for the people that, you know, really want to party, you know, they work hard, play hard, it's macho, it's, you know, and actually, if you're not immediately in that mold, you're a bit on your own and you have to fend for yourself. And I just think there needs to be a little bit of balance in touring where everyone is catered for, you know, same as if you were vegan, you know, and you've got caterers on tour, you would expect, you know, you bet if one of the band is vegan, that the caterers will be looking to cook decent food for them. But what about if, you know, three of the crew are, will it be as important? And what I hope now is, yes, it will be, but I definitely think it's taken a while to get there. If that makes any sense at all.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I vividly remember, I talked about it in a call yesterday, but I remember talking to Jim Eno from Spoon because he was great, amazing enough to let me go to one of the shows. And he was telling me about how he started doing Krav Maga. And so like on this tour, he was really focusing on taking care of himself and, you know, he continued his practice and all this stuff. And I'm like, that's so cool. I'm like, you know, I'm in a health coaching program right now and I want to help people who tour. And he's just like, that's cool. He's like, I've never heard of it, but okay. And he's like, how are you going to get clients? I'm like, I have no idea. I'm like, but that's a great question. I'm like, so I'm gonna work on that. And so, you know, it lit something in me that kind of, you know, that was like, okay, well, this is like something that doesn't really have like a laid out plan, you know, because there have been personal trainers on tour, there have been nutritionists on tour and things like that. But what does it really mean to be a health coach? What does it really mean to focus on wellness for a tour? What does it mean to really understand the challenges that every position on tour faces when they live this type of life? And so I found it really important to really explore what it means to be on the road. How does that affect your mental health? How does it affect your physical well-being? How does it affect your relationships, your communication, your finances? Because wellness, as you know, Susie, is more than just eating vegetables and making sure you get enough sleep. There's so much more to that. And the balance that you have to find when you have this sort of lifestyle, the closest thing I could really find to it was, you know, just people who travel a lot for work, but it still wasn't the same. And so now, you know, finding you, you know, talking to actually Spoon's tour manager at the time, she also was concerned about this. Like I spoke with her before I started the podcast because, you know, she like one of the difficult times in my relationship with somebody that she knew and we had a connection to, you know, we all went through this really intense emotional time and it really affected us. And I found later that it actually affected her and her, whether she wanted a tour anymore too. And so finding those things out, I'm like, there's so much more to this. And there's so many people that are being affected just by the non-communication of these lifestyle effects and these wellness elements that I really think that just having the conversation is the first step. And it's so great to see that there have been people doing it. And, you know, and she did tell me, she's like, when I realized that I needed to start inserting this wellness element, I started doing it on my tours by, you know, getting hotels that had gyms, you know, making sure that there was a decent food and things like that. Like, give me your take on all that, because it's still, you know, it blows my mind that, you know, it's been happening and now we're all coming together.
Yeah. They're like, this is even possible. Yeah. Well, first of all, I love hearing about other people doing things. It makes you think, yes, no, this is the right thing. This is the right thing. Because with the website I'm just putting together, it's healthytouring.com. And, hopefully it'll be up in about the next 2 weeks, but I'm half worried it's going to be career suicide, that people are going to look at it and think, well, but is she any good? You know, that sort of just dismissive, the old school managers, and, you know, I don't know, we shall see. But I definitely think, I mean, there's another group I've been doing a lot of work with, which is the tour production group. And we've drawn up a mental health charter, which is for touring. And it's one page, because we thought if we keep it to one page, it's realistic, it might actually get read. And it's a sort of series of bullet points of things that you can do on your tour to make the touring experience better for everyone. And nearly all of them have no impact on budget at all, because that's always the first thing, isn't it? It's always, well, how is this going to affect the bottom line? You know, which therefore means that'll get cut. You know, great if you've got enough budget to take a personal trainer or a health coach on tour. And I think that's where we should be aspiring to. But there's plenty of tours that are, you know, they'll jump in the back of a van and off they go. And this has got lots of things in it. Like, yeah, it says the same, you know, about having access to exercise facilities, you know, whether you have the budget to afford a hotel that has that, or whether you have, you know, a list of what's in the area for days off, whether you have a go-to person on tour that you can go and talk to if you've got an issue, whether that's a number of people, depending how big the tour is, always to include someone who isn't in charge as well as someone who's in charge, because what if your problem is with the person in charge? And the idea is just to have a bit more of an open door policy. So actually we all check on each other. We all look out for each other. And I think, you know, we don't have HR. We don't have contracts for the most part either. We have no protection when things go wrong. So, you know, and I think in an ideal world that will change, but that's not going to happen tomorrow. But having go-to people on tour, that's something that could happen tomorrow. That's something if you're a tour manager or production manager, you know, you could go, okay, that's what we're going to do. You can do that tomorrow. It doesn't cost anything. So, yeah, it's just it's on our website. So, yeah, please check it out. Please sign up. I think as tours start going out, I hope that something good that will have come out of this weird time is things like this, that we start, you know, just trying to do things a little bit better.
It's seriously so amazing. And I've looked at the charter and I think it's really cool. There's awesome organizations that, you know, we can team up with and really help get this going. But you're absolutely right. The bottom line is really what affects people, right? It's like, well, can we make it fit? So having different options is really important. And you know, and then you have me, like, you know, basically like on my pulpit telling people like, hey, you got to put it in the budget. Like,
yes, from the start, like it's a non-negotiable. We had Chris Grattan, a really great production manager, on the tour production group, giving a talk about some of the things he does on his tours. And he was talking about, well, you put it in the budget right from the start. You know, you hide it in there if you have to, you know, well, that's not something that's going to come out, you know, if you can do that, even better. Got to start somewhere, hasn't it? And I think a lot of it, it's like, if you're lucky enough that the artist is on board with this stuff, then you're much more likely to get it.
It does. It opens the doors.
Yeah. If the artist isn't, you got a harder job, but it doesn't mean to say you can't do anything.
Well, and it goes to say that it's really important to start with yourself, right? And that's something that you've said from, you have an interview in Polestar that is amazing, and I encourage everybody to go read it. But one of the things that you said is you have to start with yourself. And wellness can be very intimidating for people who don't quite understand how simple it is. And a lot of people don't want to talk about it. I mean, I vividly remember my partner would come home from tour, because there was one particular tour where like everybody was talking about nutrition and wellness. Everybody was trying to go for a run and do stuff. And it didn't quite fit with him because he wasn't in that place yet. And it just stressed him out and he hated it. And it's very easy to fall into a place like that when you're uncomfortable. So understanding as a person who cares about it, that it's very important to just do it yourself and be open to answering questions, but to not try to impose your beliefs or your practices or your values on other people.
You know, it's so funny you should say that. I had this conversation this morning on the telephone to a friend of mine, and I can't even remember what the context was, why it came up. But I do this thing on the tour buses, I put, I have like a essential oil blend, which is like lavender, chamomile, clary sage. And I put it on people's pillows and everyone loves it. And what I love the best is sometimes you get, you know, some of the, you know, kind of a little bit more, I don't know, trying to think of a good way to describe it. Some of the older crew guys who are less open to those sort of things. And they're like, oh God, it's horrible. Don't put that on my pillow. And then always, without doubt, within a few days, they're going, can I try a little bit of that? Can you put some of that on my pillow? And then, you know, and in no time at all, the whole bus reeks of it.
People come around, I'm telling you, because when you start taking care of yourself and you take care of other people and you do it with empathy without like trying to, you know, mother them in like a harsh way, people come around because we like being taken care of and we like when other people care and we like to see the joy that comes from somebody who takes care of themselves. It's contagious. You're like, how are you doing that? How do you like, how are you living such like so well, like, because it does, it comes out of you. It's part of, it's like your spirit just like radiates, you know.
But that's what I mean when I say that people can do whatever they like, because I don't believe that you should be imposing any kind of regime on anyone, because, you know, it's like the rebellious teenager, isn't it? If you're the one thing your parents trying to get you to do is the last thing you want to do. So yeah, you just got to do what you do, haven't you? And people get curious and maybe try something that they haven't tried before. And that's, you know, that's the only way to do it, I think.
Yeah. And that's the goal, because, you know, we also have to remember sometimes we want things to change, or we want things to be different, and we want it to happen right now. And that causes so much anxiety, and that causes things to break down, because things don't happen overnight. And I think having that awareness that it's one step at a time, and this goes across the board for anything that you're working on, right? You have to think about what you're doing today, what you can do to move forward, and not worry so much about what everybody else is doing, and not worry so much about what's going to happen in the future, and more about what's happening today and stay present.
Yeah, that not worrying about the future thing, I haven't quite got down yet. I definitely have high levels of anxiety when I think, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? And yeah, I had that very much in this year. And that's why it was so reassuring to have time to meet with other people who were feeling the same. And then you think, oh, this is kind of normal, these feelings. This isn't just me. It's when you're isolated and you think it's just you going through something, I think that makes life a lot harder. And it's that thing of like, if you can share a problem or just talk to someone, normally it helps. Normally it helps you feel better.
And that keeps you from worrying as much. It like eases the anxiety, I think, when you're going through it with other people, because yes, you know, the goal is to not worry about the future, but it's not something that comes easily. And so you need other people who are going through the same experience with you to help you through it a lot of the time. So it's really beautiful when you can find that.
It's like just recently, we had really high numbers on our Zooms because we ran a couple of sessions about the fear of going back to work. And it just seems so ironic that after desperately wanting work to start again, when it looked like there might be some work on the horizon, people were really, really anxious about it and, you know, freaking out about it. And, you know, it's funny, I think after a year staying at home, the thought of going out, being, you know, first of all, in a crowd of a lot of people, that in itself is quite scary, whether you're worried about catching COVID or not. But also then going back to work and thinking, can I still do my job? I haven't touched a desk in, you know, a year, or I haven't organized people, or I haven't, you know, you start doubting yourself. And I think there's a lot of imposter syndrome in our industry as well, because there's not so many qualifications you have when you join a tour. I mean, I think now actually that, you know, you can go to tour manager school, but you definitely couldn't a few years ago, you know. So again, it became really apparent when all the work stopped and, you know, you had to look at your CV and think, well, what other work can I get? What qualifications have I got? you know, whereas in the music industry, it's a lot of like, who have you worked with? That's your CV as much as anything. And if you're trying to work outside the music industry, no one cares who you've worked with, you know, they're not interested. So yeah, it's been an interesting time, I think, of reinvention. And a lot of every time we've had to transition to something different, it's definitely brought up a lot of fear.
So what's something that you're going to be really prioritizing and working on moving forward in order to help yourself cope with this moment of going back to work, going back to something that you've spent time away from again?
Gosh, I'd have to think about that one. I would like to say I will pace myself, but that's not so easy when you have other people relying on you. I just worked on the Glastonbury stream last week, and it was such a full-on day, and it would have been a full-on day at, you know, the best of times. I mean, there was the euphoria of, it was the first day we were allowed to hug each other in the UK, was the day I went and did the Glastonbury stream. So we had loads of hugs with even people I wouldn't ordinarily hug, but no one could stop hugging. And we were also happy to be working, but it was a full on busy day. And the run up to it was full on as well. And yeah, I was quite stressed at points. And, you know, it's hard sometimes not to get caught up in that. And I think the biggest lesson, and I know I operate best when I catch myself and then I take a step back. And whether that's like I just go and step outside or just take a few minutes, recalibrate, go back in. If I can do more of that, I know that will help. But it's funny, I think I was so out of practice. And so the thought of having to do anything at all, and then suddenly being on site, you know, on a huge live stream, it was like, oh my God, panic.
Well, that really speaks to the importance of like reassessing what your situation is and how you feel throughout your journey. So one of the things that you mentioned in the Polestar article was that, you know, sometimes the load and time can change because the situation changes throughout the tour. And if people are in a place where you can make some adjustments, you can actually incorporate a little bit more well-being once you've had a little bit of practice and things are running more smoothly.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I do think as well, as we go back, as we transition back to work, there's definitely going to be a period where we have to be very kind to each other and forgiving, I think. And that's how we'll get through. That's how we'll get back in the saddle and back to work. But yeah, I do think sometimes you're fighting against doing things the way they've always been done, because that's what everyone's used to. And the more you can, you know, reassess and think, okay, so now the tour's up and running. Now we know that we can load in and set up in this time. You know, the band are now, it's more of a sound check and less of a rehearsal. Where can you build in? Where can you take an hour out of the schedule where everyone can stop, or nearly everyone can stop, and actually, you know, just do something that's good for them, whether it's like phone home, reconnect with their family, exercise, have a nap, you know, whatever it is they need. But I think how brilliant it would be. I always remember years ago, someone told me that Status Quo have afternoon naps in their schedule. And I was thinking, now that's the kind of tour I want to be on. Because I thought, can you imagine how brilliant would that be? But yeah, whether that's true or not, I'm not sure, but I'm aspiring to it. I probably lost myself ever working again saying that.
I don't think so. But it does. It's important to schedule things in. It's important to put things in the budget. It's important to reassess. It's important to reflect and understand what things are actually feasible and what things are not at the moment, but understand that things do change and things do progress, and there's always room for growth. So it's been absolutely amazing having you on the show, Susie. Thank you so much for your time. And I'm so excited to see what things we have to look forward to in the future.
Thank you so much. It's been an absolute joy talking to you. And I will continue to listen to your incredible podcast. They're always so inspiring. So thank you.
Here are some key takeaways from my conversation with Susie Green. One of the most important red flags when heading toward burnout is feeling disconnected from life at home. If you notice intense feelings of overwhelm or disconnect, do yourself a favor and take time to care for yourself before saying yes to your next gig. 2, building a life at home is essential to forming a romantic relationship that is filled with trust and that can be maintained throughout and beyond your career. So build proper time off into your schedule to be at home. Without that, it's quite hard to sustain a relationship because your lives are too separate. And when you're on the road, be sure to schedule screen time together. 3, have go-to people on tour who are equipped to help with mental and physical health issues. If you don't know who that person is or who those people are, ask before you hit the road. 4, start with yourself. Caring for yourself is contagious, so there's no need to impose your habits and beliefs on others. And 5, in order to bring wellness on tour, we must schedule it in, put it in the budget, and regularly reflect and reassess. Go to tourproductiongroup.co.uk to download TPG's Mental Welfare and Personal Wellbeing Charter. Thank you so much for joining us on the Tour Life podcast. Be sure to give Susie a follow on Instagram at SusieGR and at The Back Lounge Touring. And don't forget to like, subscribe, leave a review on iTunes, and to follow the Tour Life on Instagram at the Tour Life podcast.